Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
Good afternoon and evening, depending on where you are. This is Kimberly Saavedra, director of the Comlock Center in Claremont, California. And our co-hosts tonight are Janet Mayer, Forever Family Foundation certified medium and author of Spirits, They Are Present, and Dr. Betty Kovach, author of Merchants of Light, The Consciousness That Is Changing the World, and The Miracle of Death, There Is Nothing But Life. Welcome to this evening's show.
Yes, this is Betty. When Janet and Kim and I decided that we were going to do a show once a month, we were trying to decide what we should talk about. And Janet came up with an idea that we loved, and that is that we would share personal experiences, perhaps visions or dreams or synchronistic events, anything that was very meaningful to you. And we would tell some of ours, and we want you to call in and tell us yours. So before I begin, I want to just mention how important the sharing of such events is. I know we've all had the experience of when we start to tell someone a significant story, something that was so meaningful to us, that when we're telling it, we begin to experience it all over again, but in an intensified way. We begin to feel aspects that we hadn't really experienced before. And I think especially what I've experienced during such times is that I see a much larger, more intense dimension of the experience. So there's something very profound and magical about sharing these kinds of experiences with people we trust. So that's what we're going to do. And I also wanted to mention that the German poet Goethe understood this very well. And he talked about such experiences being like a burning glass or a lens that we put up to the sun and see how intensely hot it would get so that it could burn the paper. That's what he used as a metaphor for this kind of experience, is that when several of us share these experiences, something magical happens, and it is a profound expansion and intensification. So with that, I think, Janet, you have something that we can start with, one of your experiences.
Sure, I'd be happy to share one, so thank you. And I totally agree. It's, you know, this is something that I was trying to decide, you know, what would be the best story to start with? And I thought, well, why not start at the beginning? So I'm going to take everybody through a story, and some of you may know, it's also in my book, but I wanted to share this because it's so profound for me, and I think other people could understand it too. But it started when I was about 5 years old. I was, you know, just a little girl living my life like, you know, anybody else would be doing at five, and I was went to bed one evening, and, you know, when I go to bed, my parents would always come in and they'd kiss you goodnight or tuck you in, and that would be it for the night, and you'd go about, you know, your little dreams. And I happened to go to sleep the one night, and I rolled over in the middle of the night, and I heard a sound, and I happened to glance towards the doorway. And when I did that, standing in the doorway was my father. And, you know, normally, like I said, it wouldn't have been anything normal, except this night I could see through him. And I could see through him to the prayer that we had hanging on the wall of St. Francis of Assisi. And I could see the phone through him. And I could see his pajamas and the pattern of them. And I must have obviously made a noise because I was, of course, afraid as a little, you know, a little girl. And when I made that noise, he shifted and he looked up at me. And before that, he had his head down, and he was kind of leaning with his arm against the door frame. And when he looked up, he looked right at me. And for some reason, I remember seeing his eyes. And it was like he was staring at me, but I was also staring at him and staring through him. And, you know, thinking I was seeing a ghost but not understanding, knowing it was my father and not knowing what it was, of course I started screaming. And when I did that, you know, my mom came running down the hall, and as she came through the door, he disappeared. And I remember trying to, you know, tell my mom what I was seeing, you know, that I was seeing a ghost and that it was Dad and this and that. And, of course, you know, she was thinking I was having a dream. And so she came in and sat next to the bed, and she started, you know, rubbing my back and trying to get me to go back to sleep, which took a really long time, by the way. And I think that, you know, I think what it did was it really opened my eyes. It just basically gave me this clear glimpse of what reality really is. And it transformed my life in that moment, not even realizing it did. But when I look back on it, I know, you know, you can see that it did, because it changed my whole life in the way I thought. You know, before this, you know, I had no preconceived conditioning of what I should and shouldn't be seeing, which was really kind of the beauty in this whole story. Is it wasn't like I was raised to believe that or raised to believe something. It's just, yeah, I woke up in the middle of the night and saw this. And so it was, you know, this amazing thing that happened. And, of course, after that, you know, I started looking around every corner. And I'll be the first to admit, I was really afraid after that, because I was thinking, okay, now I have ghosts in my house that look like my dad, or it was my dad, and what do you do? You know, so it kind of changed my whole life just in that one incident, that one moment in time, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, you know?
Definitely. Well, it is amazing, and I wish that as a child I had had experiences like that, although now that you're talking about being afraid, I don't know. But you are such a wonderful medium. When did you start having those kinds of experiences in your life after the five-year-old incident with your father?
Well, I think it just, you know, kind of just amplified after that. And it just, there were so many different incidences where it would kind of slow down, and then it would speed up a little bit where something would happen. And you know, I was thinking today, I was thinking of the story that, you know, I really want to share this other story, because it also kind of shows you how, you know, you kind of go through life and you have some experiences, and then you still have to live your life and still be who you are. But it's like when I look back now and I think about that first experience, it kind of makes me realize that, you know, if everybody had this, it would make such a difference in their life and in the world. But the thing is, because I was so afraid, one of the reasons I wanted to share that story was because I don't want other people to feel that way, or I don't want other people, you know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, we didn't have all these mediums and all these books and all these movies and all these shows and everything that would talk about mediumship or talk about experiences with a so-called ghost, which in my case ended up being astral projection. My dad had astral projection, and he was basically traveling out of his body that night. And I think what it taught me is that we have so much more going on in our life that we've never even knew we could experience. You know, we had no clue that all these things are happening around us and really happening on a daily basis at any time in our life if we pay attention. And I think I was in that space when I was a child that, you know, I was tired, I was open, I was relaxed, I felt comfortable, and so it kind of opened up all the doors for all those experiences to happen for me to see it. And then as I got older, there were experiences that, you know, I was often afraid of or I would worry about, but, you know, when something happened, it was almost like, okay, now what? What's going to happen next? Because you, and not that I want to say I enjoyed the experience because I was afraid of it as a child, but afterwards I realized how, you know, amazing of an experience it was and how cool it was. So, you know, I think looking back now, I can say, wow, that was really cool, you know, when I was little, but when I was a child, it was really fearful. And so I think if, you know, any listeners out there are thinking, oh my gosh, I would love to experience that, or I didn't want to experience, or I had my own experience, it also kind of makes you realize, you know, we're so individual, but we're also sharing in this kind of interconnected experience as well, which is really kind of cool. So there's another story that I, if you don't mind, I'll share, and then, you know, you guys feel free to jump in. It happened when we were having our house built. We were living with some in-laws, okay, and where they lived, they were actually surrounded by three different cemeteries. And, you know, I'm in the midst of, you know, we had our son. I was married. We had a son. We were having a house built. We were living with them while this house was being built. And I woke up one morning, and I couldn't stop thinking of my grandmother. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I'm like, well, you know, I kind of think she was buried in the cemetery that was across the street. And I thought, you know what, maybe I'll just drive over there. She had passed when I was young. I think I was 12 or 13. And I thought, I'm just going to drive over there and just see if I can find it. And I don't know why. You know, it's one of those things that it just all morning it was on my mind. And I know I don't have to be at a cemetery to speak to my grandmother. But for some reason, I felt like I was drawn there. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do it. And so, you know, I waited till late morning, and I got in the car, and I drove over there, and I'm thinking, I have no idea where she is. I have no idea in the cemetery where my grandmother is. So I sat there in the car, and I'm like, okay, you know, can you give me something? And I remember seeing an angel. And I'm like, okay, well, there's probably a lot of angels around here in the cemetery that people have. And I just started driving around, and I kept hearing in my head, go back, go back. So I'm thinking, okay, go to the back of the cemetery. And I drive back to the back of the cemetery. And the whole time I'm thinking, if I would tell anybody the story, they would think I was a nut, right? But for some reason, I kept feeling like my grandmother was just like, keep going, keep going. And I'm like, all right, I'm just going to drive. And so I drive to the back of the cemetery. And all of a sudden, I see this huge statue of an angel. And I just was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow, this is crazy. Okay, I'm going to stop. So I stop, and I get out of the car, and, you know, all of the tombstones are flat, so there's nothing standing straight up where you can kind of glance and see if you can see names. You literally just, I got out of the car, and I stood there, and there was a path that was going up to this big angel. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm crazy now, but I'm just going to follow what I'm feeling. I feel like there's a reason. I feel like my grandmother is trying to tell me something. I don't know why, but I have to do this. So I start walking up this path really slowly. And, you know, it's like maybe 6 or 8 rows up. All of a sudden, I stop. I just stopped. And I felt like, okay, I'm not sure why I'm doing this, but I'm going to stop. I'm just going to listen to what is coming through to me, and I'm just going to stop. And all of a sudden, I turn to the left, and I start walking down a row. Okay, now keep in mind, I was at the cemetery one time when my grandmother passed, never was there again, and I'm walking down, and I'm thinking, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I feel so guided by my grandmother that I have to do this. So as I walk down there, all of a sudden I look down about 6 or 7 stones down, and there's my grandmother's stone, okay? Now, to me, that was amazing in itself that I even found it, but what was really amazing was I looked at the stone next to it, and there on that was my grandfather's stone, who I had never met because he had passed before I was even born. He passed before any of my siblings were born, so I never met him. I never knew him. I knew nothing about him except his name, and as I looked down on his stone, it was that exact day. It was the date of his birthday.
Oh, that is amazing.
And I mean, it was one of those things that I'm like, no way. I mean, I never knew his birthday. I never knew him. And here it was, if my grandmother was saying, hey, I want you to come and see this. Today is his birthday. I want you, you know, I want to be acknowledged. I want you to know that we're still around. And I just thought that was really amazing.
I love that. And for so many people, those experiences did not happen. As a child growing up, I did not have those experiences. But when I was in grade school, I can remember feeling always like something is missing, you know, that there was something I needed, but I didn't have. I thought maybe it's a glass of water when I was really little. I used to always try to drink water. No, that wasn't it. And I don't know why some have those experiences and others don't. There are lots of reasons, but I think we all have the capacity to have experiences. We all have the capacity of very deep and profound intuition and ability to communicate with those who have passed into the invisible dimension of reality, and for us to be in connection with them. I think it's wonderful that that has been so pronounced in your life. It's wonderful. Did you have such experiences when you were a child, Kimberly?
I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I used to hear stories, though, about my great-grandmother and experiences of a grandpa saying to my grandmother, Ruthie, go out to the front porch. And she would go out there as a young girl, and the rocking chair would be moving. So there was some openness and excitement about those kinds of stories, but I hadn't experienced them.
Yeah. Well, I remember as a child going up into the Ozark Mountains to visit an aunt and uncle, and my aunt was part Cherokee and very talented person,
wow.
But there was no electricity up in the mountains, and she had two children, and my brother and I with my mother would go up there, and in the evening she would always tell stories, and of course just the lamplight, and these stories would really make us so excited about possibilities. But it wasn't until I was older and I read Carl Jung and dreams. Of course, I had heard about dreams of death in the country, and I had feared so much that I would have such a dream and that my mother would die. So when I was older, I really started paying attention to my dreams, and there were really some phenomenal things that did happen in the dream world, and especially as I was older, and then I taught mythology and fairy tale, and students would sometimes come after the class and tell me the most amazing experiences that they had had, not dream experiences, but visionary experiences, and they would usually start by saying, I have never told anyone this in my life, mm-hmm. but they were open to telling me because we had talked about such experiences through the myths and fairy tales and various stories that were very symbolic. So, and I want to encourage everyone who's listening that if you have such an experience, that we would love to hear from you, love to have you call in.
Right. Well, and even like if they have a dream that, you know, came through in a dream. I mean, how many people have that and they just brush it off? And then something happens, and they're like, wait a minute, I dreamt that. I know that happened, you know, or they have a vision from someone coming to them in a dream that's really, you know, that who have crossed over. And, you know, they're there talking to them, and they're worried, oh, I think it was a dream. And then they're like, no, it was so much stronger than that. I know it was more than a dream. And it was.
Yes. Yeah, that it actually happened. Well, it's I began to have very powerful experiences when I was pregnant with my son. And I dreamed when I was, I don't know, maybe 5 months pregnant, I actually dreamed I was in the country, I went into an old schoolhouse, I went upstairs, and when I arrived upstairs, I saw several beautiful Chinese lanterns, and one was very long, and it was illuminated, and it was sort of pulsating. And I knew that that was the soul of the child that I was going to have. And there was an old man who was sitting there, and it was so incredibly numinous, the entire dream. And he then held up a painting, but he held it up so that I could see it. And I saw a young boy coming in into time and space. It was very clear. And as he was coming to a gate, on his side it said death. And on my side, it said birth. And he walked through it and then very quickly turned to the left, climbed up the mountain pretty quickly, and then went out at the top on the same side that he had come in. And there were multicolored lights and then bright white light. And he was gone. And in the dream, I was aware that this was my son and that he would not live a long life. And then the man stood up, and I realized that he was the soul of Pishti, and he was showing me this through this painting. And he stepped closer to me, and then suddenly there was a table of food, and I said, oh, would you like something to eat? And he said, no, I can't do that. And he sort of touched my hand, and then the dream was over. And I think that the table of food was, it was clear he could not eat the food because he was of another dimension.
Right.
But I tried not to be concerned about that in terms of fearing that my son would die young. He did die at 20 years old in a car accident. But I looked back at that dream, in fact, many, many dreams, which I wrote about in the book Miracle of Death. I had many dreams, and so did he before his death. He had a dream of his death when he was 12. And
wow.
He dreamed that he was in a trauma center and that he was dead. And that he then rose above the trauma center, the hospital, went through some darkness, and appeared on the other side. And there was sort of a horseshoe shape circle, almost circle, of boys. He was standing in one place. There were four boys to his left and four boys to his right. And as he looked across an eternally burning fire, he saw the aura of the tenth boy. And he said, I knew that when the tenth one arrived, it would be me and I would be complete.
Wow.
And you know, it's interesting because we talked about that dream considerably, and of course it was very interesting. There were many synchronistic events while he was in the hospital. He was in the hospital 13 days after the car accident, unconscious, and they took him off all of the machines on Friday, but they wouldn't take him off the oxygen, but we knew he was brain dead at that point. The weekend doctor came in, and he would not take him off the oxygen, and it became very painful for my husband because he said, it looks as though he's just being breathed. Isn't there anything you can do to get the oxygen off? Well, no, he couldn't. He wouldn't. And so then on the next morning, which was Sunday, the hospital called and said, everything is fine. We can take him off the oxygen today, so anytime you want to, plan to be here for that. Of course, we were going to be there as soon as we could get dressed anyway. We always were every morning. But the interesting thing about it is that was the 10th.
Wow.
And nothing we could do could get him off the oxygen until the 10th. And afterwards, my husband and I both had many visions with him, and we learned more about the 10. But it didn't happen to me until much later in life, and starting with dreams and then visions. After his death, of course, many visions. But
Well, and there's so many synchronicities to that, you know, and it was just, he was telling you in advance, and as even now as you look back, you can find the comfort. Of course, there wasn't comfort at the time, but it's almost as if, you know, he was letting you know in advance, and then when it was happening, and then afterwards, it's like, you know, look, Mom, this is what was happening. This is what I told you, and there's, yeah, you know, something to that. It's so amazing, you know, as difficult as it is, it's also, you know, amazing that he knew what was going on, you know?
Yes, that we have this knowledge. And, of course, I didn't really know it, even though I took the dream, and the many dreams, as a matter of fact, for 2 years before his death. I dreamed many dreams of his death, but I always looked at them symbolically. And I think it's interesting now that I did, because I'd worked with dreams and fairy tales and myths. I could see what it was saying, and yet I always looked at it on another level of symbolism, and that was good because we all knew that it was coming, but we didn't really know. You know, in our conscious minds, we hadn't accepted it. For instance, my husband was someone who was a businessman and wasn't that interested in that kind of thing at that time, and never had a vision in his life, I think. And 2 weeks before Pishti, our son, was killed in a car accident, he was in his office working. And suddenly he saw the freeway, and he saw Pishti's car up on the bank of the freeway, and Pishti's body was superimposed on a car. And later he told me, he said, I knew he was dead because he was superimposed on another dimension. There were two dimensions. And he was so horrified to see that. And then he thought, oh, that's right, Pishti. It's almost time for you to do this.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And Pishti said, yes, Dad, That's right. I'll be out of the house for a little while. And then Ishvan, my husband, couldn't remember it. He just completely forgot it until the call came through. And we so just happened to both be here at the same time that afternoon. And then the dream came back, but he wouldn't tell me until later. But here is a man who had never been concerned about that. And when I had tried to talk with him about visions, had no idea what I was talking about. And after Pishti's death, and he had visions with Pishti, he was totally changed. His life was totally transformed. And he became a real anchor for me.
Well, yeah, and a lot of times that's how it happens, is somebody who has never believed in it, you know, who's never had an experience, and they're like, oh, you know, that's a bunch of baloney and this and that. And then when something life-transforming happens like that, all of a sudden it changes your whole view. And I think that's, you know, what all this is about in our life, is that opening up to see this, to understand it, and to also gain some comfort from it, don't you think?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, when I was writing the book about all of these experiences, because there were so many synchronistic events, so many dreams, so many visions before his death, and even in the year of his death, he had another dream, and it was almost like a rehearsal for the actual death. He came into a room. It was his room, but I was sitting there, and his body was in bed, and I said to him, you must come back for the body. He's not doing well. And in that dream, he would go out and come back, and he would hear me say, call his name, and he'd say, what? And I was focusing him on the body. And then he would go out into the, through the suns and planets flying, and then boom, he was back. And then he experienced a huge crash, and then he suddenly woke up, but he realized he had died in it. But he said, that body was not me, and he woke up. And I was making cappuccino that morning, and he came in, and he said, oh, well, I had a dream this morning. And so he told it to me, and it was so strange, because I remember touching his arm and saying, oh, thank God it wasn't you, when he said, I realized that body was not me. But, of course, later it was so clear that he realized he was no longer in the body. And then, whew, he was out going into another dimension. So it was, all of those dreams were so healing when I looked back at them, and I saw, even when I was pregnant with him, that the soul got in touch with me and let me know that this is the way it was going to be. And I knew deep in me, but I didn't know consciously, which was just wonderful, because I could, you know, we could have a wonderful life and we never worried, I mean, even any more than other parents worry. But but that I had, and that Ishvan did too, very near the time for it to happen, and that Pishti, our son, was reminded again with the long, almost like a rehearsal for it. So it was like a real preparation for it and consciousness of it, but a lack of consciousness, and that would give us pain. And right. But I think afterwards, and I went through all of the dreams, and it was such a comfort, because there was no way to deny that the intelligence in the universe and in the soul and in all of us who were dreaming, in that last dream about his death, there was chanting and lights were everywhere, little candle lights were everywhere. And he would say to me when he'd come in, can you hear our chanting? And it was as though everything was prepared for his death, and the chanting was taking place, and we were all ready for it on some level when it came.
Right. Well, and he was such, and it sounds like he was teaching at the same time. He was experiencing it, but he was also a teacher. And, I mean, when I'm listening to this, too, I'm thinking how he gave so many lessons through his dreams and his visions and what he felt to you, which also opened you up even more. You know, that's what's amazing, too, is that every time we have an experience, we're learning. And, you know, you think, oh, it's just an experience, but it's like it almost opens another door for us, and it teaches us a new lesson, and it brings us to a new turn in the road, and we're experiencing something else. And, you know, like, it's the same thing with, you know, the different visions and experiences I have had. They've not only been, you know, like visions, but they've been physical. I've actually had these physical experiences, and I've seen all these different things. And you know, even like, you know, one of my biggest pet peeves is when somebody says, you know, well, you couldn't know that. You know, there's no way you could know that. And I just want to, you know, you just want to shake somebody and go, listen, you know, I've experienced this. This happened to me. And I used to get really, really, really frustrated. And I think all of a sudden one day, it just kind of turned around. And it was almost as if I let go and I said, I don't really care anymore what people are thinking about my experience, because it was my experience. And I know what I had. And I know what happened to me. And I know being in the middle of it and how I felt. And if anything, it just wanted me to say, I hope you have one. You know, I hope you have some kind of experience that, you know, awakens you in some way. And I'm not saying it has to be a trauma or something horrible. I'm just saying I hope that, you know, someone comes to you in a dream, or I hope you have a vision before it happens. And you know, like when I knew my grandmother was going to pass before she passed. And, you know, you can't just go up to somebody and say, oh, I know that grandmother's going to, you know, she's going to pass. It's like, you just know. If you look at her, I looked at her. And I knew I would never see her again. And it was such a strange thing that when you have something like this happen, you know, how it does change your whole life, and how, you know, you want to tell somebody, but at the same time, you're kind of like, no, I don't want to think that way. I don't want to think that way. I don't want to put energy into that. But then when it happens, it's almost kind of like, I think she was telling me. She was letting me know, you know, that this was going to happen. And the same with your son. He was preparing you, and he was giving you all these stories and all these visions he had, so that can give you comfort later on down the road, you know?
Yes, and I think he was awakening to it, too. So, you know, he was reminding himself as well.
Right.
You know?
Definitely.
That I think we come in knowing these things, but in the time and space, we have to remind ourselves. And when he did pass over and we had visions with him, he would often say to us, I want you to remember. It was almost like how we had planned it, you know.
Yes. And which, that's interesting,
had
isn't
been
it?
So not interested in that after Pishti's death, he said, on the way to work and coming home, it was like a tape recorder that he could hear him talking to him and trying to help him to remember everything that he'd put aside, you know, and not thought about and had forgotten from the other side.
Right. It does you want, and I kind of think, too, thinking of that, it makes me think, how many children say things to their parents and the parents are like, oh, it's, you know, that's fine, honey. That's, and they let it go. I mean, how many people...
Yes, devalue it, yeah.
Right. If more parents or more, you know, anybody, loved ones, you know, partners, if they would be open to hearing what is being told, maybe we would learn so much more. Are they, you know, the individual would learn so much more. And I think that's really important, too.
Yes, that we'd all learn together, you know, as we remember and dream. I loved reading about cultures that every morning the children and their parents would tell their dreams. And
oh, wow.
So the parents would help the children to understand the dreams. So the children, from anything they could remember, is that there was a valuing of the invisible world and their inner life and how it could guide them every day in their daily lives. And we've lost that because certainly Western culture is absolutely based on the elimination of all evidence and experience of the other world, because
right.
Our science in the 1600s studied only the material world. Earlier they had studied inner experience, but the church stopped it. And that they knew that they could be killed if they did that. So for sure, they were only going to study the material world. And then we all forgot why they did just that. But we've suffered tremendously by the elimination of these deep experiences, so that it would be the most natural thing in the world, our connection with the other world and the guidance and the conversations and the visions and dreams. And that so many cultures who did not sever themselves from that world knew that people who've crossed over actually help us, that they co-create with us. They're not finished with their work. They co-create with us on a daily basis, but we've lost that, and that's caused great harm. But I think it is. I think it's coming back. So many people now are experiencing and open to things they haven't experienced. But you were going to say something, Kim?
I just wanted to pop in with the call-in for our listeners who might care to join our conversation. It's 1-888-627-6008. Again, 1-888-627-6008. And if you have something to share, we'd love to hear it.
We surely would.
And the thing is, some people are probably like, well, maybe I'll call in, maybe I won't. I mean, I hope they do for the simple fact that, you know, we do love hearing stories. We love hearing about something that has happened around them or some kind of experience they had that, you know, may have changed their life or maybe they couldn't believe that, you know, because of the way they were raised. I mean, which, you know, I spent my, you know, whole childhood growing up and going to school and going to church waiting to hear about people like me who have seen something or who have had an experience and there was never anything there. And I kept thinking, why am I not hearing this? And then I would become afraid because I thought, well, maybe it's bad, you know, and there's always that side that when, you know, and that's another pet peeve I have when, you know, everybody, if they don't understand it, they're assuming automatically it's negative or it's bad. And it's not. It's just they don't understand. And I think that's part of it is we need to learn to bring more of this into daily life so people can experience it and go when they have an experience, they can share it and they can say, you know, I don't understand it. Could you help me with it? Or I think it might be this. And I think that would help along the lines too, you know?
That's true. And you never know how valuable and meaningful that might be to someone else who has a sacred story that they haven't shared with anyone yet and doesn't know what to make of it. So it can just kind of help ease the path and open the way a little bit further for people to have more confidence to share and to trust their own.
Well, sure. I mean, it's validating, you know, if anybody can, you know, to have an experience and then have it validated, you know, right there, it kind of lifts you up to the next, you know, the next level to being open a little more and to not thinking you're crazy when you have some kind of experience or something unusual that happens or, you know, somebody that passed that comes to them in a dream or they came to them and, you know, the edge of the bed goes down and you're thinking you're crazy and you're like, no, it really does happen, that there really are many, many experiences out there that, you know, the possibilities are unlimited to what can go on in somebody's life.
Well, I was grateful to my students because they were so open about their experiences. They were from all around the world and from some cultures that had always valued such experiences, had never questioned them, but also from some violent places. But they just had amazing experiences. And of course, in teaching mythology, there are levels of consciousness, and there is finally a level that we achieve in which we really can live in that consciousness. And I would say to the students, well, it's in all of the major myths. I think there's evidence that there is a cosmic consciousness that we are capable of if we live our lives in connection the best we can with that invisible dimension of reality. And as I said, I haven't experienced it, but I think that there's evidence that we all can. And of course, later in my life, I did experience those things, but I was grateful to my students because sometimes they shared them in class. I was very grateful for that. But when they weren't quite ready to do that, they'd come to my office and just the most amazing things. And that was helpful to me. I was very grateful to them, for those things. But I wanted to say too that in our culture, I think we just have to recognize that we live in a pathological culture because we have cut off all of those dimensions of our...
Whoops. Hello?
Thank you, Betty. We have a caller. Barbara, would you please say hello and let us know the experience you'd like to share?
Hi, my name is Debbie, and... I actually had a question. I had a few things I was curious about, but I had listened to one of your previous presentations where Janet had spoken about her experience in contacting the people of, I believe it was a certain group in
Yanomami?
South America.
Oh, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. The Yanomami in South America?
And Yeah, I had just wondered. I had seen an article, I think it was in National Geographic Online, recently about them. And I was just kind of, it popped into my head. I was wondering if maybe that had something to do with their fear. Excuse me, my allergies are bothering me. Fear of genocide and loss of ancestors. It seems like, I don't know, would that be sort of their, how do I say this, concern about COVID? Because I know that recently something happened where there was an encroachment on their land and some of their people had passed away from that. So I just wondered if that had something to do with that.
With my language? Is that what you're wondering?
Like or, the message that they were sending you or that they were concerned about that?
Well, I definitely believe that, you know, they're trying to get a message out. And, you know, they've had a lot of problems with the land over the many years. You know, if you can go back, mm-hmm. you know, when I started, once the language came through and I knew what it was, and, you know, they were talking about, you know, the Amazon and different areas, you know, there's a lot of miners that come through. There's a lot of loggers, mm-hmm. and their land is being, mm-hmm. you know, taken over in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I think that could be part. They're trying to come through and let us know that, you know, we need to be more earth honoring, which was actually their very first message that they came through to me, was to be more earth honoring people. And, you know, I'm mm-hmm. I'm from the Midwest, so I've never been to South America. I had no idea what was, you know, anything about that. And so, yeah, I do definitely believe that part of their message of what's coming through is to be more earth-honoring. And, you know, we need to look at their people. We need to help the people on our planet, and we need to help our planet. And right now, with everything mm-hmm. going on, you know, it's kind of amplified in many ways. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, that's something that we all need to look at in our own way and what we can do, you know, to help out. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. is there a way to... translate what they had said to you, or is that kind of difficult to do?
Well, I have like 8 tapes that have been translated, but, you know, the problem is now is getting, you know, the person who had translated my tapes, he has crossed over to the other side. He's now, you know, living in the spirit world, and I do not have a translator. So, you know, trying to find mm-hmm. a translator or to get to South America, that's going to be really difficult at this time, which mm-hmm. that won't happen.
Yes.
But trying to find a translator, that's, you know, the thing is, if I could get that, then yes, I would be able to have more tapes translated and we could find out more about what they're saying. And mostly what they speak of is blessings for the planet and to be more mm-hmm. earth honoring. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds so simple. It's such a simple message, but it's so huge. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's a huge message.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's like, how do you make that work? How do you have one person tell the whole planet this is what needs to be done? We need to be more earth honoring. So, you know, all I can mm-hmm. do is, in my own way, is share that message and hope other people listen and other people also make, you know, choices to be more earth honoring. You know, and like mm-hmm. you know, that's you know, another big message of my life, and that's something that I think if we all kind of take a part in and recognize in our own life what we can do. You know, just like I'm saying with, you know, if you're having visions or if you feel connected to something, you know, go towards that. Go towards that and be a part of that, you know. Like, you know, if you feel maybe, I would say like South American or maybe the Indian, the Native American, if you feel towards that, go towards that. If you feel like you're, you know, towards a whatever it may be. I feel like if we're giving in that aspect of ourselves in some way, then that is helping. But yeah, I think their main mm-hmm. message was to be more earth honoring. And I think that's mm-hmm. pretty huge. That pretty much says it for our whole planet right now, don't you think?
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Completely.
So Debbie, you mentioned COVID-19, and what connection were you thinking?
The article, of course, mentioned concern about genocide in terms of people encroaching on their land and bringing, you know, diseases in that they had, well, none of us have really encountered that particular mm-hmm. virus before, but, you know, given that a lot of the people have dealt with genocide, you know, as far as in the past with exposure to germs that they didn't have any immunity to, and concern of loss of ancestors, which makes sense. Certainly.
Right. So, yeah, that's such an important point. And certainly all of the deforestation, which is being done around the world, can have effect on releasing viruses. And just not honoring the earth, the forest enough, we don't know what's going to happen to us, what's going to be the result of all of that.
Right. Yes, I really agree. I think a lot of this, if we look at it from a broader perspective, it's really our not being kind and loving towards each other and other beings and the earth, really.
Right.
In a broader perspective.
Right. If people would just step back and take a breath and, you know, remember kindness, you know, wherever they go, I think that could be a big message as well for people. And, you know, especially what's going on through this is, you know, everybody jumps in and it's like maybe take a step back and, you know, think about what you want to say and think about what you're doing. And, you know, this is for the whole planet. But that's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this, I really think, too, that somehow or other in the West, we were cut off from the other dimension and we developed just the left brain, the rational way of thinking, and so often our actions just pop right out from that. But in the ancient world, our ancestors, just like the Yanomami, I'm sure, they go to the heart, you know, that feeling dimension. To think from the heart would prevent so much of what we're doing. And in a way, we don't even know how quite to do that. But now with heart math and other scientific research, they really know that the heart is one of the brain components. In fact, it's the most powerful one. And if we could somehow learn to feel everything and think from the heart, then I think we could solve a lot more of our problems.
I completely agree, too. Yes. Yeah. Everything's connected, really. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be able to speak with you.
Thank
you. It's really an honor. Thank you.
Take care. Hi, Audrey. Thank you for calling in.
Then I think we could solve a lot more.
Hello, Audrey. He might pop on any second.
Okay.
Okay, well, maybe she'll call back. Okay.
That's okay.
We have just a few more minutes in case anyone would like to call in for a quick call. The number is 888-627-6008. We have about 5 minutes left of the show.
I hope, Audrey, that you can call back.
The producer didn't mean to choose you.
Yeah, all right.
I think that, you know, this is a good beginning, and, you know, every month if people want to try to, you know, who's listening, they might want to share their experience next month too, you know. We're going to be doing this for a while in a series with personal experiences, and they may have a vision they want to share or a dream, and they might think, oh, I don't know, but I hope that, you know, in the next month they think about it and they open themselves up too, and they allow themselves to, you know, let someone come into them or let some, you know, see what's happening in their life. And I just hope that with the personal experience series we have going on, that this will kind of make people awaken a little more and remember something they had that might have been really transformative that they kind of pushed down. And maybe now it's like, you know what, maybe I need to kind of work in that area and maybe see what else happens.
Exactly. And in thinking through that, many, many things will come back and you'll begin to see connections that you hadn't even thought about before. So we really, really hope that here with us jumping in here telling our own that will inspire you to tell us yours.
Might jumpstart you.
Yeah, jumpstart you. Yeah, right.
That would be great. I know. Well, it's because otherwise we'll just keep sharing more and more stories.
I
have a list of them. Oh, Audrey's back.
Audrey back? Good.
Oh. Audrey, thanks for calling back.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes,
perfectly. Yes, now we can.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I don't know what happened the last time. I'll be quick because I know you have to sign off, but I was I've had so many experiences similar to what you've mentioned, the cemetery story, something like that. The oddest thing that's ever happened to me is I was in love with somebody who died about 30 years ago, and I was in a dance class, and there was another woman. I was already in my 50s by this time, and another woman just kind of claimed I bumped into her, which was I was nowhere near her. And I had just been spinning anyway, so both things got me very dizzy. And then we went into a leap from there, and I felt like this person took over my body, this man who I was in love with, hooked in through my solar plexus, and I was suspended in midair in a leap. And I felt my arms being moved electronically. They fluttered once like bird wings, and I just sat there. For I don't know how many seconds I was out of my body. I could see people's reactions in the room. And then I was just gently put down after that. And I think it was just a sign that he was around and protecting me. I don't know if he stirred up the whole event to show me that or he just happened to come around when it happened. And I've asked so many mediums, like, if they've ever heard of that, that somebody literally jumped in and was operating my body, and it was against all laws of gravity to just hang there that long without moving.
Wow, I guess.
Amazing.
Wow.
Right. I definitely think that could happen. I think that I think you were letting go also at that point. And when you do that, when you're open, that allows another energy to come through you, you know, and you're still in control, but if you're allowing them to come through, you can feel, it will feel differently. So, I mean, I think that's a really, you know, a beautiful experience.
Yes, after the fact, I just didn't know, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg, you know.
We're still trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for sharing
thank
that.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed the program.
Oh, well, good. Well, good.
Hopefully you can
thank
join
you.
Us next
yes.
month, too, and
yes.
call in to tell some of your other experiences.
Yes,
that was beautiful.
You've had many, you said, so we want to hear more.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank
and before we close, we're going to turn to Janet for some parting words.
All right. There's a Mahayama prayer that I'd like to share, and it says, may all beings everywhere with whom we are inseparably interconnected be fulfilled, awakened, liberated, and free. May there be peace in this world and throughout the entire universe, and may we all together complete the spiritual journey. And
beautiful.
That's it.
Beautiful, Janet. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's it.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next month this day.
Yes.
Sounds good.